Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And for me, that's the most important thing. That's why I love having these conversations, because I get to benefit as well. And it's always about expanding our knowledge, which will lead to greater wisdom. So thank you for joining me once again on this weekly journey and exploration into possibilities, new ideas, healing, and basically the show that is all about empowering you. And if you are listening for the very first time, I want to welcome you and, of course, invite you to either go to my Facebook page and like me there, which is What Women Must Know, because I post all of my archived podcasts there, and you can listen when you want, or you can go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, and opt in there, be part of my community, get all my podcasts as well as lots of other information and education that comes along that I think is really important to share. So there you have it. Lots of ways to stay in touch and be part of this growing community committed to health and well-being. We have a really fascinating show today. I actually love this topic because it's been a profound revelation in my life. And we're going to be talking about how birth trauma impacts your life, and my guest is Lee Ankrum. So before we jump into this really interesting and profound conversation, let me just share a little bit about Lee. Lee Ankrum is a functional bodywork practitioner with 35 years of experience in teaching and private practice. She is the founder and director of the Ankrum Institute. After decades of training around the world, she has brought together multiple modalities in one comprehensive paradigm-shifting program that takes students through every system of the body in just over 2 years. Her knowledge of anatomy and physiology is deepened by her holistic understanding of the body's organizing principles. And Lee has been on the show several times before. She's always giving us a wealth of insight and knowledge that is truly so empowering. So I'm just so delighted to welcome Lee Ankrum back to the show today. So Lee, good to have you.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. It's good to talk with you again. Love being on your show.
Yeah, it's always so great when we have these conversations. There's just such a depth of knowledge and wisdom that you share, and I always love having the opportunity to learn from you. And today we're talking about a topic that is really, it's so important. I'm not sure how many people even have ever thought about birth trauma, but I certainly have. And we're going to be exploring this experience that we all have had. We all have had birth, and probably all of us have had birth trauma. We may or may not know that.
Definitely.
That's why, I mean, you. I've seen you work with newborns. And it's quite amazing to see these babies who've had traumatic birth and the impact of that birth, and then see you work. But it also reminds me and anyone watching you in your courses that we've all been there, but no one was there to help us.
Yeah. Right. So
let's talk about birth trauma. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay, what is birth trauma? First, may I say this? Let me start with this, is that you have lots and lots of women listening to your program. And I want to start by saying that some of the things that I will be sharing in this next hour can be triggering for some of these women, because it is an intense topic. And I want to say, you know, be easy with yourself and know that if you're having feelings around the birth of your children and the way it went, is that you're, you know, for the most part, you made it through, and, you know, there were things that happened, because most women have birth plans, and the birth actually does not look anything like or go anything like the birth plan that they have in their head, you know. And so I want these women to take a breath as you're listening to these different things and really just hold it in a place of perspective. So I just want to start by saying that, because it's important to note that some of this information can really trigger emotions and feelings around what happened, both to you with your children and to one personally, you know, as they've gone through their own birth, you know, experience. So just want to start by saying that.
So
birth trauma. So we all have a birth, you know, otherwise we wouldn't be here, have a birth experience. And as I said, they're often not what is in somebody's plan. And what's happened to us over the last 70 years, 75 years, is that there's much more medical intervention in birth. And these medical interventions really create impact on both mom and baby, And, you know, I was talking to a doula who is somebody who assists the couple while they're having a baby. I was talking to a doula that I really admire the other day, and she was saying that she always starts talking to the parents about, you know, you might have a birth plan, but realize it rarely, she goes, I've never seen one yet go like the birth plan. So, you know, so let's start talking about the different styles of birth, and then we can talk about the difference, you know, the impact of each kind of intervention. So in the 1940s, they began to bring out giving women ether during the birth process. So whether a woman was struggling or not, I mean, I don't even know that it was necessarily, you know, about the woman struggling or having a hard time, is the woman, so that she didn't have to feel pain. They somehow, I don't know how it got decided or how it got brought in particularly, but they began to give mom ether. Well, when mom goes into that sort of floating state, so does the baby. I don't know why they don't relate the fact that whatever drug they're giving to the mother is having impact on the infant. And so, you know, so what I think is really interesting, and this was taught to me in a class in 1994. It was one of the first birth classes I was in, learning about birth trauma. And it was so interesting because he related it to this, is that in the 1940s, you know, to the early 50s when they're giving ether, those kids became very floaty and drugged. And, you know, the other piece that happened to them was that mother was drugged out as well, and babies were taken away from the mom, and they didn't get to do that early bonding piece of experience. So what you see as those children of that kind of birth, actually, when they got to be of age to almost be adults, when more stressors come on the body, that's when we see the flower child and all lots of drugs come in. And the kind of drugs that come in at that time in the 1960s are drugs where they're just floating away and, you know, going out into other states of consciousness and stuff, which is exactly what happened in the birth, you know. What's interesting about our birth teaches us what sort of nature or the overall plan of birth is. There are four stages, and it is the first learning experience into kinesthetically in the body of how to go through the stages of problem solving. So not that the baby's thinking, well, how do I get out? But the baby is experiencing the stages of getting out. So when it's interrupted, like ether, that our first example, ether, then they kind of get lost in how do I problem solve? And you see that in us is this sort of loss, or especially those children with the flower power and the floating and all the drugs of the 60s, you know, it's really interesting. In the mid 50s, they created a drug called Pitocin, which is still used to this day. And Pitocin is a drug that creates the uterus to go into major contraction to get the baby out. So whether or not a woman actually needs that or not, with, you know, the administering of the Pitocin also starts the adrenal glands working and cortisol working. So both mom and baby are already in, they're in a stress, they become under a stress hormone, extra stress hormone. So you have the children who are coming from Pitocin births have more stress, turned on more fight or flight. And so they'll end up doing things like, you know, feeling, you know, it's so hard to describe all this stuff. But, you know, let me give an example of myself, because I was born in the 50s and I was a Pitocin birth. And whenever I would get stressed, I wanted to drive my car really fast to create more adrenaline coursing through my own body. So it's almost like you mimic what your birth was like when you come under stress.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, that's a big piece. That's a big important piece, is that when under stress, you will begin to do what happened in your birth. If what happened in your birth when you're, you know, is that your mom had drugs to knock her out, that's what you want to do, is under stress, you want to go to sleep and escape, or you want to do a drug that will take you into that floaty type place. So, you know, and Pitocin amps you up, so therefore you're going to look under stress, is that you're looking for things to meet the adrenaline rush that you're having, right? So it's really
like
interesting that the more, yes,
like cocaine.
Then you see the drug, exactly, Cheryl, exactly. You see the drugs change now, is that the drugs of choice are methamphetamine, more cocaine, you know, crack cocaine, those kinds of things that actually really speed the system up. So there's no, in my mind, let me put it this way, in my mind, there's no coincidence around seeing the progression of the way we're going with the different kinds of interventions. The other thing that happens is quite often is that with this Pitocin is the contraction on the uterus makes all the muscles of the uterus contract at once, which is not a normal contraction, way a normal contraction in a woman actually works. It all contracts at once, and it's a longer contraction than normal. So this is why we are seeing so many emergency type C-sections. Our country has the highest rate of C-sections of every country in the world. We are at like 19 or 20%, or maybe it's actually more. The last time somebody, I talked to somebody, they told me 24%. We're at like 24% of C-sections, births. And the world rate is at like 12 or 14 or something like that. But we are creating the scenarios that are causing more C-sections to happen by introducing Pitocin, whether it's needed or not. And then the Pitocin creates these babies that go under stress, and with the contraction so long, it starts to drop their heart rates. When the heart rate drops, of course, the doctor says to the mom, heart rate is dropping, we're going to have to do a C-section. Well, of course you want your baby to be well and, you know, be okay. So they end up coming out into C-sections. So let's talk about what it looks like, and then I'll go on further into more birth stuff that's happening, more birth styles, is that with what I've talked about, with the woman is in labor, and the introduction of Pitocin, what I alluded to already is that you have people that have more aggression, and you have people that feel like they can feel like their life is out of control, because this imprint on them from the birth can actually feel like that. You can have a child that has a difficult time settling and being calm and not being nervous or anxious or aggressive. These are really big pieces that come out of having Pitocin during the birthing process. You good so far, Cheryl?
Yeah. You know, it's such a profound conversation. And what I just want to add to everything we're talking about today is that when we think of the fetus in the womb, often we don't realize that that fetus is responding to the environment, that it's being imprinted in the womb by the environment.
Yes.
And certainly the birth. And then it's like there's, how do I want to say this? So the experiences we have at that very open time in our existence, and we're taking in all the sensations and experiences and trying to make sense of it in some way, to process it, it becomes a blueprint of how you are perceiving your life ever since. So it's almost like the lens through which you see life. And I'll just give an example because I was one of those babies in the 40s, and my mother probably was a really long labor. It was, I think, you know, close to 36 hours. And at some point, they gave her probably a spinal block, right? I don't think they gave her ether.
Right.
I didn't talk about, but I probably had something for the pain, so I would imagine it would be a spinal block, whatever. And all I know is this labor was, this is my memory when I experienced my birth doing primal therapy work. What I experienced was that everything was going along just fine. I was in this process. I was engaged in this process, and then it suddenly stopped. It stopped. Like no more contractions.
Right.
And it's probably when they gave her when they gave her that drug or something, everything stopped. And it not just stopped, but it was like life-threatening because I felt like I couldn't breathe, like I was trapped forever, and I wasn't ever going to survive. It was terrifying. And then at some point, contractions kicked in again, and, you know, I made it out and taken away at some point. My mother was probably so out of it. And that pattern for me, which I have discovered when I was doing this work many decades ago, was revelatory for me because in my life I would start a project and it would get to a place in the project for business where it wasn't going the way I thought it should go. You know, I wasn't getting the outcome. And it put me into so much stress that I was so depressed. I wanted to give up. I just wanted to die. That feeling, which took me a while to realize how much I was reenacting the birth trauma. And then as I realized it, I diffused it, you know, so it doesn't run me anymore. But it ran me for a long time.
Well, most people are not aware that that's what's running them and their pattern. Most people are not aware, you know, that is what's truly, truly running them, that their patterns are based upon in utero time and then the birth time. We're only talking about the birth time right now, but there is definitely conception and in utero stuff as well. So absolutely, but it's once you have worked on it, so it takes some kind of acknowledgement of looking at the pattern that one is in, and also it can be that you need some help from some practitioners because there are people doing therapies that do work with this as well. So let me go ahead and sort of talk about the next part that I just think is so huge these days. So the next one I'll talk about is a planned C-section, and they can be planned for many reasons. One, they can be planned because a woman doesn't want to go through labor, or because the doctor wants to have the baby come at a certain time, or because they've scared the woman for some reason, the baby's too big, or for other reasons. Or it can be planned because you had an emergency C-section the first time, and they don't want to do what's called a VBAC by having you have a baby that tries to go through the birth canal than if you've had this first C-section. So we tend to think that nothing happens because that baby did not go through the birth canal. And let me say that going through the birth canal has so many parts to it that are so important for us as as an animal, let's say, it gives one, the compression through the birth canal helps one to be grounded and to get a sense of self, like they get aware of self, getting that compression through. The other thing that most people don't realize is that the baby's gut bacteria is coming by going through the mother's vaginal canal. Their own gut will pick up the bacteria from mom going through the canal. That's why if mom has yeast or something, baby's going to have that in the beginning as well. So it's important to try to go through the birth canal. But these babies who are like don't have to go and have head trauma or any of these other things going through, it's very interesting because oftentimes what I'm told about the baby that's a planned, not an emergency, but planned C-section, is that those babies are really such good babies. You know, I heard it a lot of times that the baby's so good and sleeps so well that they have to wake the baby up. Well, part of the deal with that is that the baby, when the baby is birth time for the planned C-section and they cut into the uterus to get the baby out, 2,000 pounds of pressure per square inch hits that baby. So that baby actually goes into shock. So this baby that one is identifying as a really good baby is actually a baby that's in shock. So when I work on these babies, I bring them through the shock and I tell the parents, get ready because now you're going to have a baby that cries some up more and is more awake and all of these things like a baby actually should be. So, you know, what the ultimate outcome looks like is a child that's more doesn't know how to start a project, like your story, which is a common story where the hiccup happens in the middle of the birthing process, something is introduced, and so what that looks like in our life is I start a project, but somehow I can't finish it, or I get derailed, or I don't know where to go after a bit. A planned C-section doesn't even know how to start. So,
The other thing I just want to throw in what I've seen with C-sections is that they set situations later in life as they reenact this trauma, they set up situations where they have to be rescued. So instead of initiating
yes.
an action, they have to be rescued.
Yes.
You know, it's like they were, you know, like pulled
yes.
out. They were rescued, you know. So that's an interesting
right.
observation
right.
as well.
Yeah, they especially have to be rescued on the emergency C-sections. Emergency C-sections when I'm going one way and then I get halted and then I get taken out another way, those are the ones that oftentimes really have to be rescued a little bit more than the planned C-section because the planned C-section might need help because they don't even know how to start. Do you see the difference? One is I
yeah.
didn't even start. One is I started to go, but then I couldn't go, and then so then I go out a different way, and therefore I'm rescued for sure. So these are all like people probably, I don't know what the audience is thinking who is listening to this, but if you look at your own children, you can see patterns in them, and patterns that are oftentimes coming from these birth processes. So
yeah.
One of the worst things that's happening, and I am appalled. I've been working on children for probably, I don't know, 25 years, really intensely, since I got down to Tulsa, you know, 22 years ago. And then about 15 years ago, I'm just deluged with children and babies a lot. And one of the things that I have seen happen in the last 10 years that I'm just sick about, is that, you know, when I ask mom about the birth of the baby and I ask if they were induced, now I have to ask, were you in labor and induced or did they induce you before you were in labor? And I have to say that it is a greater amount of women that are now being induced before they're in labor. And oftentimes it's happening because the doctor's going to be gone on the weekend, or a woman is a day over her due date, or there's many reasons. And it's, you know what, Cheryl? I have to tell you that it's scary, that it's really, really scary, because what's happening is mother's hormones are not at play. So the oxytocin and the hormones are not going on, which are the some of the bonding that's going to happen between mom and child. And those are not going for the mother. That's one thing. The mother's, the dilating of a woman, all the hormones for that is not at play either. So what you have is you have a uterus that's in this major contraction on this baby with very little dilation happening, or super slow that's happening because it hasn't been triggered to go yet. And what is going on is the forces of this contraction on those babies when a woman's not in labor is so great that we're having multiple children with high sensory integration issues. It is so rampant. It is so rampant, Cheryl, that it's like stunning how many children have these sensory integration issues, how many children have these tics, how many children have these issues with sleeping and ability to, you know, oftentimes when you see that kid in the grocery store that cannot be handled in any way, that's a child that has had so, you know, in my mind, I see the birth process right there, and they can't be calm. They can't be slowed down. I mean, it's, oh, Cheryl, it's just terrible. It's just terrible what's happening to them, and it is very challenging to try to turn that around, actually, to try to help the system, the child system, allow that to process through and leave them. It is one of the most challenging types of work that I've encountered, is when the mom has not been in labor and they induce her. It is amazing. The next thing I'm about to say is my very, very, my personal opinion. I have been doing this a long time. My personal opinion is that is creating more things like ADD and ADHD, and even, I would say, leaving children open to more autism. This is me, my opinion, guys, saying this because I've seen it. I mean, now we have the statistics on these things went, like, for example, autism is 1 in 10,000 births had an autistic child in it. I think it was 1 in 10,000. Now we're down to 1 in 34. So, how can these changes that are happening also not play a part in this or a role in this, in these very challenging children that people are having, that people have now? It's stunning. It's just stunning. And what happens is the trauma for the child is so great. You know, it's so great on their systems that their systems are very dysregulated, very dysregulated. And we see it in all sorts of behavioral issues, and we see it in learning issues. We see it in how many children now do you see that need glasses at such an early age? I mean, it looks kind of cute to see a little pink pair of glasses on a little kid, but that is all coming out of the birth trauma and learning challenges. Those are coming out of, from my personal view of all these years of working with children, is that it's coming out of the birth trauma. So I'm just sick about it, because I encounter it more and more and more all the time. And doctors treat this, and these medical people treat this like nothing, it doesn't affect the baby at all, but it so affects the child. I mean, it so affects the child that, oh, it's not funny. So birth is difficult, or yeah, birth can be a challenge. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I want to make sure we have some time to look at what are some of the solutions to help people, whether it's children, infants, or adults. But before we do that, there are a couple of other birth scenarios I want to make sure you get to talk about, and that is the breech
birth scenario.
Okay. Okay. So breech birth, I mean, and there's different breech. You know, there's breech that is feet first, and there's breech that they're like butt first. You know, the butt is down in the canal. There's also breech where they're transverse or cross. There's different sort of breech stuff. You know, it's always kind of said, which I think is kind of interesting, it's always kind of said that breech births are that create people that are more stubborn because they, like, had to do it their way, which I think is kind of funny. I mean, from in a way, you know, I think it's kind of funny. But in our country, the breech births, as soon as they're, if a child is breech, you're getting a C-section. That is the way it goes in our country. Now, I've watched a couple of videos by some of the French doctors, with French doctors who actually allow the woman to go ahead and have, as long as it's feet first. When it's butt first, you cannot. I mean, butt first means the child is folded in half, and that's just, rarely can they get a butt first breech out. So, but if you're feet first, definitely there are, they have, in other countries, they do allow that, or just, that's just another birth position that they're doing, but they also have a woman not laying down. You know, that's part of our problem as well here in this, you know, that all the women are laying down unless, you know, you're working with somebody who has other viewpoints. But the woman is squatting, and so getting the breech out is not that it's not that difficult that I've seen in these videos that I've watched. So, but the breech birth does tend to be somebody who just has their own, you know, kind of creates a personality of somebody who has their own mind doing it their own way, you know.
The patterns that I've seen is that they do things ass backwards and somehow make it work.
Right. Yeah. That's if they got to come through. If not, then they're looking like they're looking like a planned C-section, you know. That's what ends up happening to them. They're like a planned C-section. But yeah, do things ass backwards. Yeah, they're stubborn, they do it their own way, whatever way that is, you know, and they do, you know, definitely. They definitely do that. I mean, I have worked on children and babies that were actually folded in half. And what's really interesting is that I've had, you know, I mean, like, seriously folded in half, you know, legs up around their head, that whole thing. And those children have been very stubborn. Oh, my goodness. They only want to do things their way. That's it. And that's been interesting, you know, to work with those kids. And a couple of them actually have had trouble eating because they were folded right in half. So there was a whole, I don't even know how to explain this exactly, but not a lot of room to eat. Even though they were extended open, there still was compression on the whole digestive system and had to work that out on them. So it's kind of interesting.
Are they still doing forceps deliveries these days?
Yes, they are. So that, I'm glad you brought that up, because that I was going to talk about something else as well as forceps. So for those people who have not had children with the use of forceps, forceps look like salad tongs, let's just sort of say that. And, you know, it's supposed to be placed around the ear of the baby on either side, and then gently as a guiding force or a guiding pull to come forward, but to help bring the baby out. But a lot of times the squeezing creates, oh my gosh, what I've seen in the squeezing. So what it often creates is the compression, this phenomenal compression of the bones of the head, so much so that so many of them have, you know, really early need for glasses, can also have the need for ear infections. And I've had two women recently, one was 65 and one was like 72, And each of them had these issues. One had vertigo and issues, vestibular issues, and tinnitus, ringing in the ears. The other one had ringing in the ears and terrible, terrible migraines. And when I looked at each of these women's heads, I knew that they were forceps. And what had also happened was, because, you know, the bones of the head of a baby is so soft, is that the bones that have the inner ear on them, the temporal bones, were wrapped really far back around the head, and the forceps had gone into across the middle of the ear on each of these women. And the way through was to try to realign, take the compression out, help the compression in the head, and bring this around. But you're looking at a lifetime of major compression from forceps that created migraines, vertigo, ringing in the ears. Now, I don't want to say everybody who has those symptoms came from having forceps, but these people did. And I've had other people that the forceps have been so strong that what they've done is inhibit hormonal stuff, because your hypothalamus and your pituitary is more a little bit in the front of the brain. And when the squeezing of the forceps squeezes right on it, oh my goodness, just kind of crazy stuff. But even worse than forceps, which they use, is the vacuum, or they call it, or its name is ventouse, where they put a suction cup on the top of the baby's head to help the baby get out, you know, help the baby bring them out. And suction is really bad. And one of the deals is with suction is that it, so let me stop and say this, is that there is cerebral spinal fluid that circulates around your brain, okay? But it also has cisterns in each of the parts of your brain. So you have it circulating outside, and you also have this fluid, cerebral spinal fluid, in the brain. And what the suction does is to suction the fluids up to the top of the head. And I have seen many children, but I've seen enough of them to know with this suction has led to, in several of the ones I've seen, actually seizures in the child. And I had one child come to me, and the mother misinterpreted what would happen is all of a sudden the child would, baby was about, I don't know, 14 months old. And in order to calm her baby, she had to pat it really hard on the back, because you have to meet the level of high energy that's in the child from this, the trauma energy. So, and he was a nice baby. He wasn't a bad kid at all. But in order to keep him calm, she just whack, whack, whack on the baby's back. And then all of a sudden the baby would stop. Its eyes would go up to the corner, look up to the corner, and it would just stop for like 30 or 40 seconds. And I saw that what was happening was this baby was in a silent seizure, but the mother thought it was communicating with angels. The baby was communicating with angels. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening is when I worked on the baby, he had been vacuumed. When I worked on him and helped to get the fluids placed back, and I only got to work on him once. She only brought him once. But his symptoms of doing all of that and needing to be, you know, patted so hard and jiggled all the time went away. You know, a lot of it went away because the fluids were then in the right parts of the brain. Oh, Cheryl, it's just like, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm on the front lines. You know what I mean? It's like being on the front lines with all of this stuff, you know. So anyway, that's the first one.
I just want to remind everyone as they're listening to this to take a deep breath, because this information, I mean, it's hard enough to hear the trauma that these poor little defenseless infants go through, but then we also need to realize we're potentially getting in touch with our own birth trauma, and we may be feeling some level of distress. Right. So I'm just reminding everyone, deep breath.
Yes, too, because also these caregivers are on the front lines with dealing with this. You know, these high sensory integration kids, kids who have texture issues and have, you know, like won't eat a lot of things and don't want clothes on and, you know, difficult processing things and have a hard time listening to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the moms and the caregivers are the ones that are also dealing with this on a daily basis, children that can't sleep and stuff. So let's talk about what it is that are some of the things to help. So I language it like this, and please, audience, you interpret this how you'd like to. God, nature, spirit, you know, and I'm just going to say it as nature right now. One of the big ways that, you know, nature has given us to try to, because going through the birth canal is not easy whether anybody's helped or not. You know, it squeezes the head together. But nature says, okay, now you're going to breastfeed with your mom and you're going to suck really hard, and that will help to open your head back up from all the compressions. So for me, you know, the front line was always this, you know, breastfeeding so that the baby sucked and lots of these compressions would open themselves back out. Well, I don't know about you, but my mom's generation, they were told not to do that. And so there was, for many of the people in the 40s, 50s, and into the 60s and 70s, there's this whole couple of generations that were, you know, mothers were stopped from doing that. So many more mothers, that is happening, you know, where they're breastfeeding their babies. That's one thing. Another thing is that as quickly as you can to have your baby skin on skin with you. And I'm talking about, like, if it's 50, you know, moments after the birth to as soon as you can, you know, so many children are being taken into the NICU. So there's this disconnect and this bonding that has a problem happening with that. But you want to hold your baby as much as possible, skin on skin. And if your baby, because of the trauma, cries when it doesn't, you know, a lot of children won't fall asleep unless they're on a parent or something, then allow them to sleep on you or with you, because what's happening is the trauma has a deep fear level, a sentient fear level, so that you want to let that baby be with you in bed and allow it to feel safe, because that's one of the big things is, you know, the first developmental piece for all of us in that first from birth to about, I don't know what it is, if it's 9 months or a year, is survival. And feeling safe and not feeling afraid in that first year is one of the biggest things you can do for a child to make them feel safe and have them feel like they are, you know, they're okay in the world, you know, that they are okay. Mm-hmm. So those are some things. The other thing I would definitely do is, you know, if you have a child with these kinds of things going on, find a cranial sacral practitioner who's in your, wherever you live, and find one that works with babies and children, because they are there, and slowly but surely work with your child doing cranial sacral work to try to take off these traumas that have happened to the child, as well as, you know, you, the presence of the mom and the mom's bonding. These are the really big pieces, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to know that there are, you know, healing modalities that are able to mm-hmm. bring more of that balance and healing, like cranial sacral, or even chiropractors who are trained in pediatric chiropractic. I know that I have lots of friends who are chiropractors who work with cranial sacral and also other gentle techniques that have been fantastic for children who are under stress or just to correct, you know, the trauma. So, you know, it's so important to do this and have this knowledge, because if we can bring about some of this healing early in life, we're not going to be manifesting these traumas later in life. So it'll make life much easier for people, right? That's the and parents and the family, the whole family system is affected.
Totally. Totally. The whole family system is affected. You know, the birthright is actually to be happy and feel contented. You know, that is what it's really supposed to be like. It's not very often that this is the case these last many, many years, but that is what is how it's supposed to be for a baby is that they feel happy, contented, can just sit and coo and just be, you know, easy and there. That's really what it ought to, what it, that's what nature is like, has intended for us, you know. And it's just sad that many of us do not get to experience that.
So, you know, it's acknowledging that our medicalized system has medicalized and pathologized birth and the birthing process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become an intervention. You know, birth has become considered, you know, a potential traumatic event, and it's always perceived as an emergency going on rather than understanding the natural process. That's how doctors are trained. They experience it as, a, you know, basically some sort of emergency that might be going on. And it's, you know, there's a resurgence now in reclaiming that natural process of birthing and doing it more naturally, and I would hope that many more women and couples are awakening to that. But I want to also just talk about the adults. So here we are, adults who've gone through the birth trauma without any real knowledge, any guidance to understand why we have the stress we have, why we react the way we react, why we have the relationships that we have. These are all manifestations for many people of the trauma that was early in our life. And that's where there's so much work going on right now with healing trauma in the mm-hmm. psychotherapy space, right? There's just a lot of awareness on trauma, which underlies all chronic illnesses. So when we talk about birth trauma, and there are other traumas, of course, but today we're talking about birth trauma, we have to acknowledge that birth trauma left unconscious, if we're unconscious of birth trauma, it could be generating an ongoing stress in the body that can generate chronic illnesses. So this is an important topic to learn about and understand. And some of the therapies that are available now, I mean, you know, just I know there are some therapies, there are therapists working with this. It's interesting that the psychedelic space, where they're bringing things like psilocybin, into a therapeutic setting, because it can reset this default mode network, this programming of the brain's wiring from trauma into other possibilities, right?
Yes, that is absolutely happening. And also, you know, there's others, you know, such as EMDR, which is that rapid eye movement but because you're always, as you just said, in order to sort of help the body resolve the trauma, you have to go into the nervous system, and that's not the central nervous system, but this auto-regulating nervous system that holds fight or flights and all of that. And so, you know, there's different kinds of therapies that work with that work with trauma, but talk therapy does not. Talk therapy does not access that part of the nervous system, and so therefore it's not helping to it's not helping for trauma resolution. Trauma resolution is has a very different kind of connection into the body. So if you've been doing therapy for 25 or 30 years or something and you're still not okay, that's because it hasn't accessed the trauma, you know, because it doesn't. Because it's a different part of your brain. That is a very different part of your brain. The emotional part is very different than the trauma part, and they are not together. So, you know, eventually you need to hook them all up together, but right now they're not together. So that's a big piece of trauma. And one
so
thing that I also want to tell people, what else do I see affected?
What do you see as effective?
Don't you ask me what else?
What other therapies? Yeah.
What other therapies? So there's something called brain spotting. That's besides the EMDR, there are some trauma therapists who are doing somatic therapy, which is to access to working within the body. And there are some therapists, like we actually have someone in Tulsa who does the work with the psilocybins and those kinds of things, that is taking somebody monitored into accessing the traumas that way. I'm trying to think what other therapies are called. Some of the other they're all somatic, meaning that it goes in. You have to go into the body with trauma. So,
No
more coming to mind for me.
You know, even if people looked up craniosacral practitioners, because that can release a lot of the trauma that's held in the brain. Trying to do a therapy based on cognitive, processing isn't going to work. You can't figure it out with your brain.
It doesn't work.
You can't figure it out by just trying to process a thought.
And even like thinking, well, I'm going to think it away. You know, it just that I'm serious. The trauma lodges in different place in the brain. I mean, we can do a whole, oh my God, I just did a whole, in my school, in the third module, I always do a trauma lecture one morning, and I do a whole trauma lecture. And part of it is to say that trauma does not go into, one should define trauma. Trauma is anything that overwhelms or puts shock into the body. So, like your birth is overwhelming. So, you know, a car accident puts shock in your body. A surgery puts shock in your body. So, anything that's overwhelming puts shock into your body is what a trauma is. The way we sort of language it is big T trauma versus little T trauma. Little T trauma is, you know, my mom liked my sister more than me. Even though that's horrible, that's little T trauma because it's emotional, you know. And big T trauma doesn't always have memory because it's somatic. It's going in the body. So it's not like you can talk it to work out the big T trauma. So it's in very different parts of the brain that it goes into. That's why talk therapy doesn't access it, you know. Not that talk therapy is not good. It's just not accessing trauma. Important to make that distinction.
Yeah, very important actually, because you want to mm-hmm. be getting results. You don't want to be doing something where you're spending a lot of money and getting no outcomes.
Outcome for the trauma outcome. You can be having outcomes.
I know. I mean,
you're in the emotional front.
Right. Yeah, you're just right. not
no,
in
get
the
it.
Right
I
therapy.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about your program, your school that you have created, and the program that you have. Your Facebook page, people where they can go to get more knowledge, information, education from what your work is all about.
Great. Well, my school is we call it a school of functional bodywork. Which what that means is that the approach we have to the body that I'm teaching in my program is to look at somebody as a whole and to look for where the core issues or the driving issues for people's pain patterns and issues are coming from. Because so many of us have gone to practitioners and they work. I have pain, for example, I have pain in my neck. They work on your neck. You feel better for a day and then it comes back. But where is it really coming from? So my program is this 2-year program that meets 4 days every other month, 4 days every other month. And I'm teaching how to see where the, excuse me, how pain patterns are created from other places. You know, our last talk about the organs, we talked about how the liver gives you pain in the right side of your neck. So if I'm always just working your neck, then I never get the core reason for it to go. So the school is really a very in-depth process oriented to teach somebody the principles of how the body works and how core issues actually work to create pain patterns, as well as, of course, teaching the techniques then for those places. So we teach how to work on everything in the body, from your ankle to your TMJ, to working the inner ear, to helping people with digestive issues, to, you know, everything. Everything is actually attended to in that 2 years. We cover every part. So we work structurally through the body, and then we begin to, and then I teach about two-thirds of the way through, we begin to work on each of the different organs and how to treat the organs, as well as every single module of the 14 modules has cranial sacral as part of the module as well. So we have, so it's a very in-depth program that teaches principles and teaches a deeper understanding of the whole body, and that gives you a view of understanding how pain and how dysfunction works. So it's quite the program. We have people coming from all over the country coming to the program. So, yeah,
If people want to learn more, they can go to your website, which is Ankrum Institute.
Yep.
It's A-N-K-R-U-M,
right.
AnkrumInstitute.com.
Yep, and you can also go to lots of, I have all sorts of little videos on YouTube also at Ankrum Institute that talk about all sorts of parts. We have short ones and a little bit longer ones, and I also have a Facebook page, although I have not posted on it in a little while. But really going to the website, and, of course, through the website, you can always email me and ask me any questions or anything like that. Love to answer your questions.
Well,
there are
thanks
also
so much.
On the,
oh, go ahead.
Thank you. No. That's great.
Okay, good. So it's Ankrum Institute, and the YouTubes you put together demonstrating so much education about the body are fantastic. So if people just want to learn more about the body, go to your YouTube, to Lee's YouTube channel, because you'll get quite an education right there. So, Lee, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much once again for such profound and in-depth information, helping us to unravel our mysteries of who we are and why we are, and the healing path that can bring us more love, peace, and harmony. So appreciate all the wonderful work that you are doing in the world and with your institute.
Thank you, Cheryl, so much. I appreciate you.
And to everyone listening, I appreciate you so much for being part of this community, and I trust you'll be with me every week, and for sure next Thursday, and of course my love code is every Saturday at 11, so get the archives over at my Facebook page, like me there, What Women Must Know. And until next week, may you always honor the wisdom of the feminine self. Bye for now.